Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Golf Shake Podcast. Matt, can you believe this is the 32nd episode we've done this year?
It's crazy. It's gone so quick, right?
Has it?
I think so.
I mean, might have done for you. I can't believe we're in August and kind of halfway through August already. Yeah.
Do you know what I think is more crazy? Because when you put a number on it, it doesn't feel like anything to me. But I looked into it the other day. And we started doing this as like the second coming of the Golf Shake Podcast, if you like, back in January.
Yeah, it was almost like the first week of the year, really, wasn't it? Was it halfway through January, something like that?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah,
yeah.
I went looking when I went begging for reviews.
That's been good. I mean, we've had plenty to talk about. There's been plenty going on this week again, hasn't there? I mean, it's been packed with tournaments. I mean, it's just golf, wall to wall golf now until probably the Ryder Cup finishes now, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? It's just relentless stuff every single week. Finally, the DP World Tour is back this week as well. Seems like, we can talk about us doing this for a long time. It seems like they haven't played golf for a long time. So there's either going to be some rusty golfers out there or maybe some that were in, you know, massive need of a break that might come out the traps a little bit quicker and have a good finish to the season. So let's hope for that. Let's hope for some more good golf. On the other side of the pond this week, we saw Lucas Glover win again, holding off Patrick Cantlay in a playoff. I don't know if you watched much of this, Matt, but it was really, really impressive performance. Lucas Glover is a hell of a putter, by the way.
Now he is, though, right? He struggled with the yips for a little while, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, now he's got this kind of broom handle thing that he's got. Yeah.
What's your take on that, by the way? So firstly, in answer to your question, I didn't watch too much of it.
I watched the playoff and I watched bits of the tournament each day, really. I didn't watch any prolonged, like I wasn't sat there for like 2 or 3 hours watching it or anything, but I probably watched an hour each night. What are my thoughts on putters like he's got?
So I haven't got an issue with the putter, but I know every time somebody does well that putts that way, the whole anchoring debate comes about again.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to make of it myself. I mean, when you look at him putt, I think, you know, it looks like that top hand is just kind of pressed into his T-shirt, which would suggest it must be touching his body. I don't know. Because if it was just floating free, why would you need to get it so close to the T-shirt?
I don't even know what the rules are about. Like, I don't even know what constitutes it. Because for me, arm lock putters are the same. Because they're actually locking against your arm, so they're actually anchored. To be honest, I don't think any of them should be against the rules anyway. I think you should be able to put with whatever the hell you want to put with and just crack on.
Yeah,
but really, I mean, understand why they did it.
I kind of buy into the argument of the putter should be the shortest club in the bag. It's not something that I get too irate about. Put it that way.
I mean, if they sort of limited the length like they have done with the driver, they could limit the length of putters as well and just say, you know, 36, 37 inches is the longest you can have a putter and have done with it like that. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me. I mean, you generally, when you look at people who've got weird and wonderful wacky putters and they're really long, you tend to see that they're not very good at putting, so it doesn't really...
I almost feel like they've got those for a reason, right? No one's...
Yeah, I mean, the thing you've got to realise is you're watching the guy that's probably putting the best that week on the TV, right? And Lucas Glover hasn't won every week this year, so he's obviously not putting that well the rest of the season. So, yeah, he's going to be streaky, just like we all are when we play golf. And you know, who's to say that next week it won't be someone who's got a really short putter that wins and gets on a hot streak? You know, someone like Scheffler who just, you know, holds everything, or Rahm or someone like that. It tends to be that these guys just have streaky weeks and hold loads of putts. And it's just that whenever someone does one with a putter that's not 35, 36 inches long, that we all get a bit crazy about it. But to be honest, it doesn't bother me at all, mate. In answer to your question, I don't care really what people put with. I don't really think it should be against the rules. I've tried using putters like that before, and before the anchoring ban, tried to use like those belly putters that people used to have and broom handle ones. I just can't understand how people can even put with them anyway.
No.
They're absolutely awful. So, Yeah, I couldn't use one. It would make my putting worse trying to use one. So, I mean, I feel for those guys who get the yips, because putting when you've putted badly is not enjoyable, particularly when you hit it as good as some of these guys do. The likes of Keegan Bradley still managed to be a very good player since that. And, you know, we look at the putters that, you know, everyone seems to be using at the minute, that Odyssey Jailbird one that, you know, which is an over length putter. I mean, there's a one Fowler's got something like 37 or 38 inches long. I mean, I know he's not anchoring it or arm locking it, but it's like counterbalanced, isn't it? So it's almost doing the same thing. So, I mean, yeah, there's argument for that, but it doesn't bother me at all.
Good. Let's move on then.
So, yeah, that's the PGA Tour. Obviously, we're going to run into, we've got the FedEx Cup, sort of Tour Championship 2 weeks' time. This week, we've got the BMW at Olympia Fields. So, again, the field size has been cut down. We've got guys that are playing really good golf. Very concentrated field now, and it's probably going to be, now we're getting to the sort of business end. We're probably going to see the cream rise to the top a little bit more. I mean, I don't know if you've looked at the field. Obviously, there's the names you'd expect there to be there. Is there anyone that you think? I mean, for me, Rory seems to be playing really nicely. Fleetwood seems to be playing really nicely. Those guys are kind of on trend to, I mean, Tommy particularly, I can't believe he hasn't won in the last 2 months, really. But he's obviously due one. Hopefully the BMW will be the one that he does win.
Yeah, I think it's the cream's rising. It always manages to rise to the top of these playoffs. Jordan Spieth doesn't look too bad either, to be honest, at the moment.
Yeah, he's playing great. Really good stuff.
Yeah, but do you know what? I'm still looking back to Scottie Scheffler, because he can't. One day I just think any day now it's just going to click again.
I think the same with Rahm as well. I think he's just sort of one half decent round away from just kind of getting his tail back up again and just battering everybody. It's good. It's an exciting time of the year. And like you say, the next sort of 2 weeks on the PGA Tour, and then, the DP is now kind of restarting and kind of making that run into the race to Dubai. We've got the Ryder Cup coming up. There's a lot of good golf, but in the ladies' game, then, let's talk about the AIG Women's Open, which did throw up, a fantastic week of golf. Lilia Vu winning a second major of her life, but also the second major of her season. And, I mean, it was just seriously impressive. She just didn't give anyone a look in at all, did she, on that Sunday? And she didn't come back towards anybody. There's some shaky starts from some of the girls that were just behind her. And we all wanted Charlie to win. I know I did anyway. But yeah, I mean, what an impressive performance that was.
It was incredible knowing that, and at no fault of her own, knowing that everybody that was there, or maybe, let's give her some credit, maybe 95 to 98% of people that were there would have been rooting for Charlie Hull.
Yeah, it was a bit like the whole Brian Harman and Fleetwood kind of scenario, wasn't it, really? And,
yeah.
And everyone wanting Rory or Fleetwood to win, and yeah.
Fair play to her.
Play like that.
Do you know what? Sometimes though, I think would it help you, because you've got kind of, you can almost put low expectations on yourself. But I don't think for one second. I mean, Charlie started pretty. Wasn't the best start yesterday, and you've got to think of the intense pressure that she probably felt like she was under, knowing that everybody there would have wanted her to win.
Huge. It must be tough. Having the kind of weight of expectation that she did have, and being the only kind of home player that was in with a shout, it just kind of got heavier and heavier on her as the week went on. I mean, it has to be said, over the first three rounds, she literally held everything.
Yeah.
To be kind of tied for the lead going into that last round. I mean, it almost looked like she needed to have the round of her life, really, to beat Lilia Vu, because she'd hold so many putts and chipped in and bunker shots and all sorts of stuff that was going in for her.
Yeah.
That genuinely doesn't last for four rounds.
Yeah. But, it was a good, it was a great event. And I think it's been a really good few weeks for ladies golf. We had a great event up at Dundonald's. Then we've had this one at Walton Heath, which looked incredible, by the way.
Yeah, it did. It's somewhere I've never played, and it's definitely on the bucket list. It's somewhere I'd love to go down and have a game at, and it just looks like it tests everything about your game of golf. And they played in some pretty tough conditions as well over the 4 days, and it wasn't easy, and at times they made it very much look very easy.
Yeah, no, they did. They certainly did. So, yeah, so look, so they've got... it was actually an article that I read on Women and Golfer about the prize funds going up next year by 20%. I think the people that... Spectator was... the number of spectators this year was up by nearly 50% compared to last year. And then next year they're going... They're going again to St Andrews, so it should be. So that, you know, looking ahead, that
it's that cool. I mean, the women's game is doing a lot for junior golf in this country, and particularly girls golf. I mean, we run the or have run the kind of Girls Golf Rocks coaching initiative through England Golf in the last couple of years, and we've had some girls come through that who have kept with the game and really sort of starting to improve, and now they're starting to take notice of some of these leading players in the ladies game. Certainly I have a couple of young girls that I teach and they're kind of between sort of 7 and 10 years old. And now they're kind of really looking up to the likes of Charlie Hull and, you know, Georgia Hall. They tend to look at the homegrown players. Leona Maguire is another one. But then, you know, I think the Solheim Cup this year will be probably the first one that some of these girls that I coach are going to take note of, so they're probably going to see some of the Americans and the Nelly Corders of this world, and you know, Lilia Vu now, who are obviously flying the flag for the American team. It's just a great time for ladies and girls golf, really, and I hope that it kind of inspires them to stay in the game, because it's very difficult to fall out of it, as you know, many of my friends that I grew up playing with now don't play the game at all. There's only the ones of us that were kind of have turned pro that even play golf ever anymore. you know, a lot of the lads and girls I grew up playing with at my home club back in Lincolnshire don't even play anymore.
Mm. Well, yeah, I did see lots of initiatives for youngers, not just young girls, but obviously families. I think getting families involved is key. Brilliant.
I mean, it's obviously a very male dominated sport, and it probably always will be, but getting more ladies out on the golf course is something we push every year at Howley Hall, where I'm the professional. You know, we do sort of ladies taster sessions every year, and kind of run then coaching sessions throughout the summer. We start to get to this time of year, and obviously the light's going to start drawing in pretty soon, and the weather's going to turn for the worst. It's difficult to keep people in the game, and it takes a while to get proficient enough that you can actually get around a golf course as well. This isn't something that, you know, we do like 6 week coaching blocks for the ladies, and 6 weeks isn't enough for you to be able to go and play golf, is it? It's just not. So you've almost got to be playing or hitting balls for 4 to 6 months before you're even good enough to go and play a round of golf. And that's the hard bit, really. It doesn't come naturally to a lot of people, and particularly a lot of the ladies that are starting the game that I'm coaching are kind of at that kind of retiring age, and they don't really play that much sport at the minute. So actually picking up a new sport like golf is quite difficult, and it's physically pretty demanding. I mean, some of the younger ladies and girls that I teach tend to kind of take to it very, very quickly, and particularly the ones that play lots of sport. I've got a bit of a cohort at the moment that play lots of badminton, lots of hockey, and they literally have picked the game up very quickly, and almost in 3 or 4 lessons could get out on the golf course and hit it. Do you know what I mean? But it's not that easy for everyone. You know yourself, you've picked it up later on in life, I suppose, than many people would do. And it's not an easy game just to get up and running with, is it?
It's definitely not. Definitely not. But it seems like all the, you know, lots of golf clubs like yourself are doing all the right things to get the right people in and get people involved at an early age. And that's only going to be a good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, we've obviously got the Solheim Cup not in the not too distant future as well. So, yeah, that's going to be a massive, massive event for ladies golf, and hopefully will bring even more into the game. But back to the men's game then, Matt. So we've already touched on a very, very busy period. We had another LIV Golf event this week at Bedminster, which Cameron Smith won. You won't have watched any of this. I know you won't, but Big Phil had it going for quite a substantial amount of time, and last round kind of fell away a little bit. Patrick Reed played pretty well again. So there was lots of good golf going on, and but yeah, Cam Smith basically blew everyone away in the end and was absolutely phenomenal, as he very often is. But yeah, I know it's not an event you'll have watched, Matt, but it's still
Look, I'll be honest, this is gospel truth, right? I didn't even know that they were playing this week until I saw Eddie Pepperell and Lee Westwood going at each other on Twitter today.
Yeah, well, I didn't see that, but I think that's pretty. It's still pretty pathetic that people like that are arguing with each other. I think it's absolutely stupid. I mean, get over it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Eddie's wrong because I've not even seen what he's written, and I'm not saying Lee is either. But it's I just don't understand why people have this huge problem.
I think that unfortunately this time around there was only one person that came across as a bit of a fool. I could have used a different word.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have to put the filters on the podcast. Yeah, there was only one person that came across really bad in that, and unfortunately again that was Lee Westwood.
Right.
And he just doesn't do himself any favours. Like sometimes I think go and do what you need to do and just go and do it. You know, don't try and kind of just stir the pot as you go. I just don't think there's any need.
He must feel very defensive because it just seems like they're all the guys, they in brackets, the guys that have gone to live, just feel like they just get attacked for making that decision all the time. It must be just so tiring for him to have to.
But in this scenario, I don't think anyone was attacked. You know, no one was attacking him. Unfortunately, I think when you try to take on someone like Eddie Pepperell, who's you know quite smart in some of his opinions and the way that he comes across sometimes, I know he's not everybody's cup of tea. But you know, I think he made a fairly valid point. You have to go and dig it out and have a look. But yeah, I mean, it's just there is no need. There is no need. You know, just go and do what you need to do, and just. You know, if he's feeling guilty or if he's feeling bad, then he's got to address that himself. And, you know, I don't think he's getting to a point where people are attacking him. I think people are just happy to let him go and do what they need to do. Just leave everything else alone. Just go and do it. And I think that's half the problem.
Yeah, like I said to you, I haven't looked at it. It's just like, you know, Saudi Arabia is not going to go anywhere. Do you know what I mean? They've got loads of money. They're wading into sport. They love sport. They want to get involved in sport, whether it's boxing, whether it's golf, whether it's football now, where the Saudi Pro League is just buying up everybody. And it looks like they're in it for the long haul to do that as well. It looks like they're going to try and build that league up to be a rival to some of the top ones in Europe, which who's to say it won't be. But yeah, I mean, they've just got bucket loads of cash, and you know, some people want bucket loads of cash. And, you know, I've got no problem with people from doing that, really.
I've got no problem with it. I've got no problem with it. I just wouldn't burn the path that I've walked on for 20 odd years, you know, and try and drag it through the mud as you go.
No, I just think there's no need. Then I don't think the DP World Tour have covered themselves in glory either at times. And also, I mean, this whole alliance that they had with the PGA Tour, which just seemed like the craziest thing ever, and then for the PGA Tour to then get in bed with the Saudis just literally just makes them look mugs as well. So I don't, yeah, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? I don't think there is a right and wrong kind of side of the argument, if I'm brutally honest. But yeah, I mean, that Liv's not going anywhere, and, you know, they're back in the Asian Tour, which have got another event in this country, which I'm sure Westwood will be playing this week as well, up at Close House, because it's, you know, another pretty well supported event. I think it's like a $2 million or €2 million prize fund. I'm not quite sure, but it's a decent amount of money that those guys are playing for, and it's a good pathway for some of those guys to get onto Liv as well, which we spoke about, you know, a couple of months ago on the podcast that. you know, it's already proved a decent pathway for players to get through there and make some decent money. So, yeah, who's to say that that's not going to happen again? But yeah, I mean, I completely get that people don't watch LIV and don't like it and can't be bothered with it. But there's plenty of DP World Tour events that I can't be bothered with as well, if I'm brutally honest with you. But yeah, like you say, there's arguments to be had on both sides, isn't there? And I don't think anyone's ever going to be right in what they're saying. I've not seen anything that these guys have written to each other, but the fact that they're doing it on social media is pretty pathetic in the first place. But yeah, I don't know. Like I say, LIV's not going anywhere, is it?
Not for the short term, I don't think.
Anyway, let's get off this subject, Matt, because it's very divisive. More to the point, we need another Matt Lockwood update, because it's about that time in the podcast where we you know the answer to this question, but I don't, where every week we find out what the heck's going on at your golf club and whether he's qualified for the Pindar Trophy or not. Those of you that listen weekly may be interested, maybe not, but I know it's really getting under Matt's skin.
He's getting quite funny now. Right, in short, no.
Okay, no drum roll this week. Okay.
No, but he... so we've had this weekend just gone. We've basically had the first part of it's quite a fun thing to do, actually. I don't know, I've never done it before, but basically there's you play a Stableford one weekend, so you either enter Saturday, Sunday, or they do a midweek one, and then in 2 weeks time they do a medal, and again you either enter Saturday, Sunday, or a midweek medal. Yeah, if you play on Saturday and Sunday, you can play both, but your first score is the one that they take. And basically, it's a combined competition where in 2 weeks' time, we played a medal. They'll take our net medal score and take away the Stableford points that we've just had this weekend.
Right.
So in theory, the lowest score after the deduction of the Stableford points is your winner. So we had a moment today where it was almost the conversation between myself and Mr. Lockwood was quite entertaining, because we didn't know whether... So there's a winner for the Stableford, there's a winner for the medal, but the overall was like one of our a major competitions or a board competition.
Okay.
So we didn't know whether if he won the Stableford or if he won the medal, he would qualify for the Pindar, or if the Pindar qualification was just for the overall. And I'm pretty sure it's just the overall, because he was going to see if he could have another crack at the midweek Stableford on Wednesday this week. We're playing together, but we've done some digging, and we had it confirmed that he won't be qualifying for the Pindar this week. So we've plenty of time left. Plenty of time left. That's what I keep telling him.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, but I even actually dug out the email that we got sent last year with a list of all the qualifiers for the Pindar, and I sent him a message saying, I don't suppose you've got that list, have you? And then I literally just replied very quickly saying, actually, silly question, I'll go and look for it, because he didn't qualify for it last year either. So yeah, so the search goes on. Yep.
Poor old Matt. I'm sure he's getting plenty of heat from the guys at your golf club as well, is he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's getting... It's borderline bullying now.
Well, that's not good. We don't like bullying.
No.
Friendly banter is good. Bullying is not good.
He's going to live.
Matt, if you're listening, you just need to play better, mate. Come on.
Play better.
Do it. Right, so let's talk about this week then. So we've talked about what's gone on. We've had a bit of a talk about LIV. This week we've got DP World Tour. We've got ISPS Handa at Galgorm Castle. Okay. Have you looked at the field of this, Matt? Have you seen who's playing?
Very briefly. Okay. Very briefly. I know it's one of the mixed ones where they do the women and the men's at the same time again?
I don't think it is this.
I know they did that last year.
Yeah, they did.
It's very hard. When I've had so much time off, it's very hard to kind of get a feel for who's, you know, could do well, who couldn't do well. But one guy that I do like the look of, who's absolutely tearing it up on the Challenge Tour, is Brandon Robinson Thompson.
Yeah.
Matteo
Manassero as well. Really want to see him do well.
Yeah.
He's been doing great on the Challenge Tour too.
Yep. They've both been doing okay.
I really want to see Dan Gavins do well. He's won there before. His first ever DP World Tour win was at Galgorm. Yeah, I know he's been in Northern Ireland for the last week as well. So he's played County Down. I think he's played a few other places over there as well. So yeah, his game should be in good shape. So no excuses, Dan. Obviously, former guest on the podcast as well. But also links to Howley Hall Golf Club, which is why I'm pushing him. But yeah, there's obviously lots. To be honest, it's a stronger field than you would normally see for this event, purely because they haven't played for ages. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. Marcus Armitage is in there as well, our man from Howley Hall, and he needs some money before the end of the season to get him into that Race to Dubai spot. Dan Brown's been playing great as well. Obviously, did well over on the PGA Tour as well. In the kind of few weeks off that they've had, where some of these guys have been able to get over to the PGA Tour and play. There's just been some good performances all around, really. So, yeah, I'm obviously hoping Dan or Marcus win, but yeah, I mean, the picks you've made there are pretty good. Adrian Ortega's there. Who else have we got here on the list that we've seen?
I'll tell you someone else, Tom McKibben, who is a recent winner. He's attached to Galgorm, so he's going to have a bit of home advantage as well.
Matt Jordan, who obviously did so well at Hoylake, he's in the field. Eddie Pepperell, who we've just been talking about, he's playing as well.
I've just noticed one lad that I will mention very briefly, and it's a good friend of mine, Joe, who actually used to do a podcast with a few years back before COVID. He's got a player that he coaches called Hab Islam, who's been doing very well on the Clutch Tour. He's a young lad.
Yeah.
And I've just noticed that he's in the field this week.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I didn't even know he was in there. It's just, when you're looking down the list to see where people are attached to, and then you just see Cardi Golf. That's my mate Joe Cardi. It's quite cool to see. So I hope he has a good week.
Very good.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of good golf to come. Anyway, let's stop talking about how these guys who are absolutely amazing at golf. Let's talk about us, who are very bang average. What have you been doing in the last 7 days, golf-wise, Matt? Come on.
It was bang average yesterday.
I saw, actually. Yeah, I didn't mean to tee that up when I was introducing that. But yeah, I saw that you hadn't really had your best couple of days. Or best. Was it 36 holes in one day?
Yeah, so it was 36 holes yesterday.
I've got one this week as well.
Yeah, so look, I played in the club comp Saturday. Actually, played okay Saturday. It felt okay. For me, I'll be honest. The last month to 6 weeks, I've probably played the best golf consistently I've played in quite a while. And then got to the competition yesterday. So this was the Coronation Cup at Felixstowe.
Okay.
And for anybody that does follow me on Instagram in particular, you'll see the photos that I posted comparing the course yesterday to how it was this time last year.
Right.
And being a links course, Felixstowe, it this time of year it should be dry, fiery, a little bit burnt out. The greens are normally a little bit quicker, I found, than what they were yesterday. And then if you've got this wispy rough where if you do miss fairways, you can normally find the ball and it's normally fairly okay to play out of. But this year it was just completely different. I mean, it was quite windy anyway. And with the weather conditions that we've had here, the rain mixed with the sun and the heat, I mean, I've never seen the golf course look greener. And then what happens was there's almost like Parkland style rough on the golf course where if you were going in it, it was really difficult to get out of. And I'm making no excuses. I got off to a pretty good start. I was 2 over on the front in the morning round. And I literally missed 3 fairways coming back and lost 3 golf balls. So it kind of cost me a good score in the morning. But again, without kind of covering ground that I've posted on my social media, there was 55 players. One dropped out the afternoon round. So in total, there was 109 scores returned all day. Okay. And only five of those were under handicap. And they were only under handicap by one or two shots. Okay. And it's normally a golf course where you can see people go relatively low. So it just goes to show. And I woke up this morning and looked at the England Golf, and there was a playing calculations condition score thing of two, which is the highest I've seen since we've been using this new world handicap system. So in theory, that's like the old competition scratch score being two over. So I'm not going to beat myself up over the fact that I shot like 84 and 86. I lost a bit of, I don't say interest in the afternoon round, but,
it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, when you've shot a bad first round and you know you're not in contention and you know you've almost played yourself out of it in the first 18 holes, it's very difficult to. I mean, some people don't even go out there for the second round, which I always find a bit strange and kind of almost a bit like you've bottled it a little bit. I think it's good to kind of grit your teeth, own it, and go out there and play again. So well done to you for doing that. But it is hard to concentrate and hard to sort of think about shooting a decent score when you're already so disappointed that it's kind of gone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What was difficult for me was I was out relatively early. I think I was the third group out. So by the time I finished, you have your lunch and you've got quite a quick turnaround. It's like half an hour. So you do that, and as you're going back out, there's not that many scores come in. But actually, of the scores, so there was three groups. I was the third group. So there was 3, 6, 9, 12. So there was 15 scores in by the time we was going back out. And it wasn't to look at, I'm just looking on the board and I'm looking at an 84. And I think there was a 79. But other than that, everyone else was in the 80s. So you kind of had an idea that it was, sometimes you know if you're playing bad, but sometimes you know if it's just a tough day out there. So I felt like I hadn't, the back nine could have been two or three shots better, but I didn't feel like I was massively out of it in terms of a total score. But what I didn't need to do is I didn't need to get on the first tee and hit it out of bounds onto the road.
Oh no.
On the afternoon round here.
Oh no, that makes you just want to turn straight back round again, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a tough opening hole at Felixstowe, but it was playing downwind. What I tend to do is I try to play match play against myself. But obviously when you double the first, because I actually made a really good up and down with my second ball out the greenside bunker. And then you just feel like you're chasing in all aspects. So it was a tough day, but enjoyable. I do enjoy it. I do. So that's my story for the week. What about you? Have you played?
No, but I've been trying my best to do some practice because I've got a 36-hole event on Wednesday this week, which is at Howley Hall, actually, the Yorkshire Open. I haven't played 18 holes at Howley Hall since the winter, so it's been a while. But I went out there tonight and played, 9 holes?
Okay.
And it was very average. I think I was one over for 9 holes, but didn't really hit it that good. And to be honest, haven't been. We spoke last week and I'd played 3 pro-ams the week before and honestly was just bang average, awful. I don't know what the hell's going on with my game really. But yeah, tonight I didn't hit it great, but scored okay. I mean, one over's not disastrous. I mean, it's not great by any stretch of the imagination. But we'll see. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. So we have like a 2-tee start really in the Yorkshire Open. So I'm off the 11th tee in the morning and the first tee in the afternoon. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, you've got to be in it to win it, Matt, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? You've got to
absolutely
be in there, give it a go and see what happens. Who knows? But we all know we play this game and your confidence can be on the floor at times. And mine's pretty bad at the minute because I just don't really feel like I'm hitting it good enough to put any sort of score together. But you never know what's going to happen on the day, do you? You might just flush it for 4 or 5 hours and you never know. So we'll see. But yeah, fingers crossed that happens. But I'll try my hardest.
Who would have bet against Lucas Glover winning two events in a row on a PGA Tour? Exactly.
Yeah.
Three weeks ago.
And Lilia Vu as well. I mean, she herself said that she didn't think she would ever win again after she played the Chevron this year. She said she played that bad after it that she didn't think she was ever going to win a tournament again. And she's won another major in the same year. So it's how stupid this game is. You know, we've spoke before about the way Max Homer kind of said about, you know, you're always a professional golfer's always one swing away from either giving up or thinking they can win, you know, the Masters. It's absolutely bonkers, this game.
It is true, though. It's absolutely true. I think sometimes, you know, people talk about that kind of that winning mentality that, say, someone like Tiger Woods had. But I do think there's a lot to be said for people that are just, do you know what? I don't think I'll ever win again. Like, you're putting yourself under no pressure. You've got almost got no expectations. You could almost argue, does that kind of free you up a little bit to just relax and, you know, I suppose it's no different to us, you know. We go out and make a double on the first and then, you know, shoot four over, for example. So, I mean, we've all done it, or we've all done something to the equivalent where you've had a really crap start and then you just kind of relax because...
Sometimes you just need that to kind of shake you into concentrating properly, don't you?
And
get yourself around. But, yeah, it's never easy. And like I just said to you, these 36-hole events, you can very easily play yourself out of them very quickly, can't you? And, you know, if you can't win it in that first 18, but you can certainly lose it, can't you? And that's always been my kind of mindset, that I try to get it round kind of somewhere around par in that first round. And then maybe if you're somewhere near where the leaders are, you have a bit of a go for it in the second round. But, you know, that... trying to push and trying to hit shots that you're not capable of is a very easy trap to fall into. And hopefully I won't do that on Wednesday, but yeah, just almost trying to keep it simple and try and keep it in play, really, I think it's easier said than done, but it's kind of the name of the game, isn't it? If you can hit as many fairways as you can possibly hit, even if they're not that long a tee shot, at least you've got a shot that you can get on the green. And particularly, you know, a handicap golfer's level, you don't have to get on all the greens in regulation. You don't have to knock it on a par four in two or a par five in three. You're not supposed to do that because you've probably got shots on these holes. Do you know what I mean? You think your way around a little bit better. And certainly that's kind of what I'm going to aim to do on Wednesday, definitely.
Sounds like a plan.
So 36 holes in a day is horrible, isn't it? It's not enjoyable.
Oh, I don't know. I love it.
But yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I've never liked it. I just kind of think I'd like to play and then come back the next day and play again. That's kind of, yeah, I'm more about all that, really.
I think for anybody that is got any of these, I mean, I've got two tips, I think, which I think is quite often overlooked. My first one is take two pairs of shoes and two pairs of socks and don't be scared to change your shoes halfway around, like after the first round. Because I know that in the afternoon, some people start to get tired, their feet start to ache. And just if you've got a different kind of brand or a different, you know, model of shoe, if you like, then you just get different pressure points in different shoes. It sounds crazy, but trust me on that one. The other thing is just watch what you're eating at lunchtime. Don't go mad. You know, the two guys that I played with yesterday, you know, both had a couple of beers with lunch. We had like half an hour.
Oh, good God, I wouldn't be doing that.
You know, and then there was, it was like a cold buffet. So I literally just had some ham and a roll, made it into like a ham roll and literally seven or eight chips. And that was me. I was pretty good because you see them, they sit down, they get comfortable, and then it takes them 5 or 6 hours in the afternoon to warm up. So
yeah,
just consume what you need in between the rounds. And almost don't sit down for too long and stiff up. Keep moving in between the two rounds. There's Holbrook's tips for the week.
Yeah, it's very easy to sit down and sort of stiffen up again, and then it takes a bit of getting going, doesn't it, for that afternoon round. Yeah, I think I'm one of these. I like to sort of get back out on the golf course as quick as possible. You know, I'd actually quite like to almost just grab a sandwich and get and almost do a drive through, get straight back on the first tee and off you go again. Do you know what I mean? And get cracking. But yeah, I realise that's not possible all the time. But but yeah, it is difficult, and particularly 36 hole events, like you say, it's hard to kind of. Well, it's hard to concentrate for one round of golf, isn't it? Let alone when you've got two, at the end of a day of playing golf for 36 holes, your brain is completely, for what mine is anyway, completely fried with what you've been doing during the day. And, you're certainly very, very tired when you finish afterwards, aren't you?
I slept okay last night, put it that way.
Yeah, I bet you did, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from some of the guys listening what they think about 36 hole events. Do they like them? Do they not like them? Is it something that I personally don't like them at all. I'd rather just play over 2 days. Maybe some of you out there are the same. Maybe you just love playing golf and want to play 36 holes in a day. I don't know, but yeah, let us know. It'd be good to hear from you on that one too.
Yeah.
But Matt, we've not really got a lot more to talk about this week, to be fair, mate. But hopefully Mr. Lockwood's going to pull his finger out and we're going to have some good news for you next week. If not, we've still got some great golf to look forward to on the various tours around the world. DP World Tour is back at Galgong Castle in Northern Ireland, and we've also got the BMW at Olympia Fields to see who's going to push towards that tour championship and lift the FedEx Cup and all that cash that comes with it. But yeah, for now, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Good luck to you on Wednesday.
Oh, cheers. I need it. Flipping out.